A rat's tail in Vietnam was once worth a bounty. Colonial French officials, plagued by a rat problem, offered payment for each tail delivered. Clever residents didn't hunt rats. They bred them, chopped off the tails, and released the tailless rodents to breed more. The measure became the target, and the system collapsed. The same pattern plays out every day in financial markets, where our very attempts to measure and track wealth create their own distortions. We're all breeding rats in our portfolios, and most of us don't even realize it. Think about what money actually is: pieces of paper or digital numbers that have value only because we collectively agree they do. No alien observing Earth would understand why humans exchange lifetimes of labor for rectangles of cotton fiber. Yet this shared fiction, this mass delusion we all participate in, has built civilizations. While bees cooperate through genetic programming and monkeys max out at about 100 relationships, humans can coordinate millions of strangers through stories we tell ourselves about value, nations, and corporations. Here's the problem. Those same storytelling brains that built financial markets are spectacularly bad at navigating them. Your brain is 150,000 years old, but stock markets are barely 400 years old. You're piloting a Stone Age survival machine through a digital landscape it was never designed for. When your ancestors saw a rustling bush, the paranoid ones, who assumed definitely a lion, survived to pass on their genes. You inherited their jumpy, loss-averse, pattern-seeking brain, perfect for avoiding predators, terrible for holding stocks through a correction. Brain scans reveal something startling. When people play games involving money, their neural activity mirrors cocaine addicts getting high. This explains why billionaires risk prison for insider trading and why checking your portfolio activates the same dopamine circuits as gambling. Even more perversely, anticipating money feels better than receiving it. We're neurologically doomed to perpetual dissatisfaction. Your body doesn't just reflect emotions, it creates them. When markets drop, you feel it in the same brain regions that process physical pain. Meanwhile, gains activate comparatively weaker reward circuits. We feel losses roughly twice as intensely as equivalent gains, which is why a portfolio down 10% ruins your week, but one up 10% barely registers by Friday. This asymmetry made perfect sense on the African savanna. Missing berries was disappointing. Getting eaten was fatal. Your ancestors, who felt losses more intensely, survived. But in modern markets, this ancient wiring becomes catastrophic. Financial losses activate your anterior insula, the same region that processes disgust. Your body treats a market correction like a physical threat, flooding you with cortisol and shutting down rational thinking. Research tracking traders during volatile markets found their cortisol levels increased 68% over 8 days. When researchers artificially elevated cortisol in participants, risk appetite dropped 44%. Your risk tolerance isn't a stable personality trait, it's a hormone level. The stressed investor who panic sells isn't weak-willed, they're physiologically different. Their working memory drops up to 50%, and their body screams, "Do something," precisely when they should do nothing. Fear never truly disappears. It just hides. Rats cured of fear through exposure therapy still showed fear responses when re-exposed later. The fear was suppressed, not erased. This explains why investors who lived through 2008 still feel their chest tighten during market dips, even after multiple recoveries. Your body holds on to trauma your rational mind has processed, ready to hijack your portfolio at the worst moment. From the 1970s onward, American schools embraced self-esteem building with religious fervor. When researchers analyzed 15,000 studies, only 200 met scientific standards, revealing devastating results. Self-esteem predicted virtually nothing, not academic performance, behavior, or career success. What it did create was a generation convinced their opinions mattered more than evidence. This manifests through confirmation bias. We spend 36% more time reading essays that align with our opinions. During the 2016 election, most voters had zero friends supporting the opposing candidate. Even more insidious, we engage in internal propaganda. In experiments, people who choose between similarly ranked options later rate their choice higher and the rejected option lower, even when they can't remember choosing at all. Brain scans during the 2024 presidential election revealed the mechanism. When participants evaluated contradictory statements from their preferred candidate, emotional brain centers activated, drowning out inconsistencies. When evaluating the opposing candidate, those centers stayed quiet, allowing logic to identify every contradiction. We're not impartial judges. We're lawyers for our existing beliefs. With approximately 35,000 daily decisions, your brain defaults to whatever's familiar. Offer someone two jelly bean bowls. Bowl A, one red winner among nine white losers, 10% chance. Bowl B, nine red winners among 91 white losers, 9% chance. Rationally, Bowl A is superior, yet two-thirds choose Bowl B because nine success stories feel better than one, even when odds are worse. After 9/11, Americans switched from flying to driving, resulting in approximately 1,595 additional road fatalities, half the number killed in the Twin Towers. Scary stories bypass critical filters because dangerous memories helped our ancestors survive. Stories synchronize brains. Research shows that when someone tells you a story, your brain activity begins matching theirs, allowing them to plant thoughts directly into your mind. This makes narratives powerful tools for connection, but dangerous guides for investment. We're drowning in information. Data production doubles annually and is projected to double every 12 hours within a decade. Yet more information consistently impairs decision-making. Brain scans reveal that decision-making centers initially activate with new information, but suddenly shut down when overloaded. Financial markets need this noise to function. In a perfectly efficient market where everyone agreed on fair prices, trading would cease. Noise creates liquidity through frequent trading, but at the cost of imperfect pricing. The behavioral investor must navigate this paradox. Markets need irrational participants to function, but you don't want to be one of them. People with damage to emotional brain centers struggle with even simple decisions, revealing that emotion isn't the enemy of good choices. It's essential to making any choices at all. The problem isn't that we feel, it's that strong emotions homogenize behavior, eliminating the diversity of thought essential to good investing. Like moviegoers who behave individually until someone yells fire and everyone rushes for the exit, emotion makes investors strangers to their own rules. Emotion creates market distortions. Positive feelings make positive outcomes seem more likely, while negative feelings do the opposite. Emotion also truncates our perception of time, making the present feel like all that exists, catastrophic for investors, for whom time is the great wealth compounder. Research consistently shows that traders exhibiting the most emotion perform significantly worse. Stanford researchers even found that brain-damaged individuals with impaired emotional processing outperformed neurotypical participants in gambling tasks by taking consistent risks and bouncing back quickly after losses. We view markets through subjective lenses shaped by experience. Americans overweight American stocks. Steelworkers load up on manufacturing. About 80% of us suffer from over-optimism, believing good things await our families, while only 30% believe the same for others. Daniel Kahneman calls overconfidence the most significant cognitive bias because it emboldens every other bias. The endowment effect compounds this. We irrationally overvalue what we own. In a Cornell study, students given either a mug or chocolate bar could trade, but only 10% did, despite half initially preferring the other item. Professional traders exhibit the same bias, holding investments they wouldn't buy today simply because they already own them. Diversification represents humility made flesh, concrete acknowledgement that you don't know which stocks will soar. Research shows nearly 40% of stocks suffer catastrophic losses in their lifetime, with technology stocks failing at 57%. Yet diversification has diminishing returns. The behavioral investor seeks middle ground, enough diversification to prevent catastrophic loss, but sufficient concentration to allow proper vetting. Combat overconfidence with the Feynman technique, Identify what you don't know, educate yourself, then teach it to a novice. When forced to explain concepts simply, we discover knowledge gaps. Adopt the outside view, a dispassionate, probability-based approach, contrasting with our natural, inside view, relying on personal biases. Compare your situation to similar ones and estimate probabilities based on external evidence rather than gut feelings. Build a steel man instead of a straw man. Construct the strongest possible version of ideas you disagree with. Passive investing suffers from Campbell's Law. When a measure becomes a target, it ceases to be a good measure. Indexing creates distortions. When companies join an index, valuations rise automatically as investors buy regardless of fundamentals. With passive funds now owning over 10% of 458 S&P 500 companies, up from just 2 in 2005, stocks are increasingly bought from habit rather than conviction. Yet passive investing remains the sensible default for most investors. It's inexpensive and consistently outperforms active management, with 82 to 88% of managers underperforming their benchmarks over 5 to 10 years. The behavioral investor combines passive strategies, low fees, and diversification with active management's bias awareness, accepting that willpower is contextual. Environment dramatically shapes behavior, from classical music reducing crime to French music boosting French wine sales. Success comes from accepting personal mediocrity, not claiming genius. Under stress, we lose 13% of cognitive capacity, making investment knowledge least accessible when most needed. Even Newton lost his fortune in the South Sea bubble. Intelligence doesn't prevent poor decisions. Becoming exceptional starts with admitting you're average and designing processes robust enough to overcome behavioral limitations. Strip away fallacious beliefs. Doing less often yields more. The behavioral investor's superpower is disciplined inaction, letting time and compound returns work while your Stone Age brain screams to act. Professionals make identical mistakes as individuals, holding lowest cash at market tops and highest at bottoms. Stanford students, falsely told they excelled at identifying suicide notes, believed in their superior ability even after learning the test was fake. In markets, this creates investors doubling down on losses because admitting error feels like admitting incompetence. The lesson isn't eliminating emotion, that's impossible, but recognizing when emotion drives decisions and having systems preventing catastrophe. Like recovering alcoholics avoiding whiskey at home, behavioral investors design environments where emotional hijacking can't destroy decades of disciplined saving. The most powerful investing phrases, "I don't know," and "I was wrong," are the hardest to say.